Our correspondent Timothy Abu Mosabe joined us earlier from central Gaza city of Deir al-Bala to give us the latest on the situation in the besieged strip.
Let me begin with the appalling massacre that was committed over the last night when the Israeli fighter jets attacked and destroyed a residential building in Al-Zawaida town. At least 9 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, were slaughtered while they were sleeping inside their house. In the meantime, another attack took place in Al-Burej refugee camp when the Israeli fighter jets also destroyed another house there. 2 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed as a consequence. Meanwhile, 2 Palestinians were killed in a civilian car that was hit moments ago in Deir al-Bala city by the Israeli fighter jets. 2 Palestinian civilians were slaughtered till this moment. In the meantime, the Israeli artillery continued to shell and attack the eastern parts of Deir al-Balah and al-Musaddar town in the eastern part of the central area of Gaza Strip. When it comes to Khan Yunis city, the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained and continued against the eastern parts of the city, basically Abasan and Bani Suhaila towns. When it comes to Rafah city, as you know, the Israeli occupation forces continued to detonate more Palestinian residential squares in addition to the chronic and the ceaseless artillery shelling targeting the central area of Rafah city. Needless to mention that the current situation on the ground is still over tragic for the Palestinian people who are still being deprived of having any access to the basic humanitarian needs, as the Israeli occupation forces are still closing Rafah crossing and preventing any entry of the humanitarian supplies to the entire population in Gaza Strip.
Palestinians have condemned a controversial visit of the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds by Israeli far-right minister Itamar Ben-Gvir. The Islamic Jihad resistance movement said the Israeli minister violated the sanctity of the holy site, adding that its responsibility lies with the countries that attempt to normalize relations with the regime. One of the clerics of the mosque called it an open attack that gives the regime legitimacy to launch large-scale attacks on Al-Aqsa. According to the 1967 agreement, non-Muslims, including Jews, are not allowed to perform rituals at Islam's third holiest site, but Ben-Gvir claimed that he visited to pray for the return of Israeli captives from Gaza, adding that he worked hard to ensure that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu would not give in to pressure on signing a prisoner swap deal. Netanyahu is already accused of delaying the negotiations and not being serious on reaching a Gaza ceasefire agreement. The Israeli occupation forces have carried out fresh raids on a number of towns and villages in the occupied West Bank. The IOF opened fire on residents and abducted 2 Palestinian sisters in one of their incursions into a village near Nablus. Earlier, we were joined by our correspondent from Ramallah, Munarkandi, with more details on the issue.
Unfortunately, the Israeli forces stormed the village of Tel West Nablus, and as you have mentioned, the Israeli soldiers opened fire at the residents there during the military operation and arrested 2 sisters from the village of Tel. One of them is a university student. The Israeli troops had also stormed the village of Deir Abu Mash'al, northwest Ramallah, and arrested a number of Palestinians. The total number is still unknown. However, the Israeli forces also raided the village of Beit Lakia, west Ramallah, and in the 2 villages, 5 Palestinians have been detained. This is what has been reported in addition to the fact that many Palestinians were arrested in Deir Abu Mash'al, but up till the moment it's not clear. Only 5 from the 2 villages has been reported. The cases had been reported. The Israeli forces had also stormed a number of villages in El Khalil, south of the occupied West Bank, the villages of Bani Naim, Halhoul, Beit Kahel, as well as Al Arub refugee camp, and at least 6 Palestinians had been detained by the Israeli forces. The Israeli troops stormed as well this morning the village of Taqwa, north Beit Lahem, and arrested at least 2 more Palestinians. Since the early hours of today, Up till the moment, we are speaking about over 15 Palestinians were detained. This is what the Commission of Prisoners Affairs has been or knew about them, in addition to others were arrested as from several areas across the occupied West Bank.
Israel has resorted to the assassination drive in Lebanon amid the regime's failure to stop Hezbollah's retaliatory missile and drone strikes. The Lebanese resistance movement and the Israeli military remain engaged in clashes amid the Gaza genocide. Our Beirut correspondent Mariam Saleh has the latest on the growing tensions along Lebanon's southern border.
Well, after what seemed to be a day of somewhat calm, Hezbollah actually in some cases, like for example on Eid holidays and yesterday because of the Ashura processions, in order for people who are commemorating Ashura, they did keep a low profile yesterday. There were not any major operations. Today, early in the morning at 6:30, the Israelis began a new aggression and launched an assassination, actually a drone attack, targeted a pickup truck in the area of near Gaza, which is in the Bekaa area, actually, the western Bekaa. And so this led to the martyrdom of one of the members of the Jamaat Islamiyah, the Muslim Brotherhood party here in Lebanon, and his name is Muhammad Zubara. And this is not the first member of the Jamaat Islamiyah who has been assassinated by the Israelis through these drone attacks. And the reason why they are targeting members of Jamaat Islamiyah, as they are targeting members of Hezbollah, of course, and commanders of Hezbollah, is because Jamaat Islamiyah is closely cooperating and coordinating with the resistance movement Hezbollah, and is also launching operations despite the fact that they are minimal. We have limited operations, launching of rockets in some areas. They are active, but still, the Israelis have begun this, of course, strategy and this series of assassinations, starting from the assassination of Sheikh Saleh al-Aruri, a prominent figure of Hamas in the southern suburbs of Beirut. And that basically began a lot of assassinations that seemed to target individual vehicles in order to assassinate specific members of either Hezbollah or Jamaat Islamiyah. And even in some instances, we had assassinations of Hamas members.
In this segment of the program, Iran's acting foreign minister says the only path to peace in Gaza is an immediate and permanent end to the ongoing Israeli genocide. Ali Baradikani held the UN Security Council responsible for failing to act decisively against the Israeli crimes.
The only way to restore peace is to put an immediate, complete, and permanent end to the occupation, aggression, and crimes committed by this regime. The UN Security Council has the responsibility to achieve this goal, and regrettably, the inaction and inability of the Security Council over the past nearly 8 years has emboldened the Israeli regime to commit more crimes against oppressed people of Palestine.
The Iranian minister urged the UN body to rectify its past failure and fulfill its legal, political, and human duty. Baradikani blamed the United States in particular for the UN's failure to address the Palestinian crisis, citing repeated U.S. vetoes of anti-Israel resolutions. He said Washington has been a permanent accomplice in Israel's crimes through comprehensive financial, military, and intelligence support. The foreign minister also renewed Iran's call on the UN Security Council to take decisive measures to end the Israeli genocide and ensure rapid and unhindered entry of aid into the fully blockaded Palestinian territory. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have journalist and podcaster Esha Krishna Swamy joining us from St. Petersburg, and also we have Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation, Pakistan, Mr. Sabir Abu Maryam, who's joining us from Karachi. Welcome to the program, to the both of you. Let's start off with Ms. Krishna Swamy in St. Petersburg. The Iranian acting foreign minister, in his statement to the UN, has urged that the United Nations Security Council specifically to intervene and act decisively against the Israeli crimes. In his own words, the UN body has to rectify its past failure and fulfill its legal, political, and human duty. Why have we not seen more tangible action from the United Nations Security Council to stop this genocide?
Well, there's one simple reason, and that is the United States. The United States blocks all, uses its unilateral veto power to block just about any resolution that would, on behalf of Israel, and so because of that, it's nearly impossible to pass any resolutions that hold Israel accountable. So, that's the most simple answer I can give.
Right, and Mr. Abu Mariam, talking about the failure of the United Nations Security Council to intervene and to take some tangible action with regards to the Israeli genocide against the Palestinians in Gaza, the Iranian foreign minister has highlighted that apart from the U.S.'s political, military, and financial support, at the United Nations Security Council itself, repeated vetoes by the United States has prevented from the adoption and passing of any form of resolution that could bring an end to this genocide.
Thank you. Thank you. And first of all, I think the Iranian acting foreign minister, who has taken the stance in the recent United Nations Security Council meeting, is a very appropriate and very fit on the situation. Because we, as a people of Asia, we know very well that the many, many problems, many, many issues in our region, especially in the Palestinian conflict, especially in the West Asian countries, we have many issues which is belongs to the United States. So we should be clear that United States of America, the government of United States, is not a part of any solution of any issue. This is a main issue that the United States is the behind of all issues and creating chaos in the different region of the world, especially in the Western Asian countries, because of they want to spy, they want to capture, they want to control all the politics, all the military, all the financial things in the region for their hegemony. So now, recently, we say that the United States has lost its hegemony and power. And the stance of Iranian acting foreign minister, Mr. Bhatmi Khani, is very appropriate and very, very much powerful. And we support this stance. And also, I want to mention that the statement of the foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, he also pointed out that the United States formula for the peace has been failed, because United States government is the part of the issue in the Palestinian conflict. United States government directly involved in the genocide of the Palestinian oppressed people in the Gaza Strip, in the Rafah, in Lebanon, in Syria, in the region. So how it is possible that Biden, on one hand, supporting military and financial and intelligence support to the Zionist regime, and from the other hand, he is putting the peace process? No, this is stupidity. So we say that the world must awaken. The international community, especially the Asian countries, the West Asian, the Arabian, they must awake. They must come from the sleep. Why they are keeping silence? Why they are keeping criminal silence over the genocide of Palestinians? Because the main reason is that United States is behind of this genocide and crimes. So it cannot be prevailed that the United States will be the solution. So any peace design any clues which will be produced by the U.S. government, no one can accept. No one, even the Palestinian, will never accept. And also, it should not be accepted, because the main culprit, main criminal, and the main responsible of the genocide is the United States government.
All right, thanks a lot. That was Secretary General of the Palestine Foundation Pakistan, Sabri Abu Mariam, joining us from Karachi. Also thanks to journalist and podcaster Esha Krishnaswamy joining us from St. Petersburg. That brings us to an end here on this edition of News Review. Moving on, the U.S. and its allied forces have reportedly launched yet another airstrike against Yemen. Reports say that American and British warplanes targeted International Airport in western Hodeidah province. There's no confirmation about possible damage or casualties yet. The U.S. and its allies have launched such attacks multiple times in recent months amid their frustration in the face of Yemen's anti-Israel maritime operations. In retaliation to Western aggression and in support of Gaza, Yemen launched anti-Israel and anti-West operations. The Yemeni army first began its naval operation against Israeli ships and put a ban on other vessels heading to ports in the occupied territories. Dozens of ships have been targeted in the Red and Arabian Seas, as well as the Gulf of Aden. Sana'a has said such operations will continue as long as Israel keeps committing genocide in Gaza. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Riza, peace be upon him, has said, "If you are filled with joy when you are with us, the Ahlul Bayt, in the upper reaches of the heaven, then be sorrowful when we are sad, and be joyous when we are joyous."
Hidden Files. 100 years ago, wars were fought with tanks, rifles, machine guns, chemical weapons, explosive devices, etc. Well, fast forward, and wars have gotten much more sophisticated. And at times, the most lethal weapon is intangible. From misinformation, media campaigns to sanctions, the tools of war have changed to target nations and to cause upheaval from within first, and then add the more common hardware tools to the chest, like WMDs, IEDs, phosphorus bombs and missiles, and, you know, great technological advancement like those. Just as there are alleged rules to traditional warfare that are not followed, so are there alleged rules to this new form of warfare, not targeting civilian populations and not inflicting collective punishment and not committing crimes against humanity. These are all nice concepts, which are not always followed. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today we will look at a form of war which many do not understand the effects of, sanctions, and especially the unilateral sanctions regime of the United States. According to the United Nations, sanctions are meant to be used as a last resort. It says it is a response to stopping extremism, curbing smuggling, and massive human rights violations. However, what has been the norm of the UN is that countries which are members of the Security Council are not sanctioned, and the sanction of others depends on the political and geostrategic interests of Security Council members. Well, the main sanction regime today comes from the United States and its unilateral sanctions. Washington sanctions a country and pressures other countries from dealing with the targeted sanctioned country, usually by economic threats or even worse. According to the United Nations, a proliferation of secondary sanctions has resulted in a growing fear of sanctions and overcompliance, leading to serious adverse effects on the human rights of millions of people around the world. Secondary sanctions are intended to prevent third parties, states, commercial entities, and individuals from trading with countries that are subject to sanctions issued by another country. We will talk about the legality of these unilateral sanctions a little bit later in this show.
Currently, a third of the world's population is affected by U.S. sanctions. Since 1990, the U.S. has imposed unilateral sanctions in over 20 countries. Countries that try to have independent policies from the United States are the most affected. Countries like Cuba, which has been on the U.S. sanctioned list for 61 years now. Iran, which was the most sanctioned country in history until the start of the Russia-Ukraine war. Iran has been on the U.S. sanctions list for 43 years. And now, Russia is the most sanctioned country in the world. Then there is Venezuela, which has suffered for years from U.S. sanctions due to its revolutionary policies. According to the Center for Economic and Policy Research, 40,000 Venezuelans have died due to U.S. sanctions.
I'd like to welcome our first guest to the show.
Cindy Sheehan. Cindy Sheehan is a peace and social justice advocate who became internationally prominent after her son Casey was killed in Iraq in 2004. She set up a peace camp near then-President George Bush's vacation home in Crawford, Texas. She is an author and hosts The Soapbox on Substack.
Well, thanks so much for being with us, Cindy. I'd like to hear your opinion on the way sanctions have been used to cause maximum pressure on countries and their populations.
Sanctions are supposedly put in place because the United States, the State Department, the politicians, the media, you know, whatever, this big class of propagandists, they'll say that so-and-so is killing his own people, so-and-so is a brutal dictatorship, blah, blah, blah. And so the United States, they're, you know, and Cuba is a perfect example of this. There's been a blockade in Cuba almost as long as I have been alive. And they're supposedly placed there so the people will get so disadvantaged and so upset with their own governments that they'll rise up against their governments. But as you know, a victim living in a place where there's been really harsh sanctions, that's not exactly what happens. And it actually is harmful to the people. And I believe, and I've talked to many people in the countries that you mentioned, and I've been to Cuba many times, that it makes them stronger to stay firm against the empire, against imperialism, against neoliberalism.
Well, the irony of these U.S. sanctions is that the American people actually don't benefit from what their country is doing to others. So who's benefiting from this, Cindy?
The war profiteers, globalists, the capitalists, they're the ones that profit. But we've seen here in the United States that even though it was a slow march to the collapse of our economic system here in the United States, especially since 2011, we've seen since the start of COVID, we've seen since the brutal sanctions put against Russia this year, that it is actually now starting to reflect here in the United States with gas prices and inflation, hyperinflation, the reduction of services, the crumbling of our infrastructure. So these sanctions are coming home to roost.
And any final comments that you have, Cindy, on this issue?
Many people are starting to wake up to that fact. And so while corporate media is collapsing, we're seeing the rise of alternative media and a rise of truth seekers. So there's still hope. And it's like talking person to person. I'm here in California at 8 o'clock in the morning. You're in Iran, 10 and a half hours away from me. And we know, just like exposing the truth from real humans, real workers, real people who are experiencing, you know, the good and the bad, and how we can work together for peace and for economic security and environmental sustainability for the entire world.
Oh, thank you so much, Cindy Sheehan, for being with us right here on Hidden Files.
One of the main messages broadcast about people, such as those living in Afghanistan, Venezuela, and Iran, is that they are suffering. We watch corporate media pump out story after story of the suffering of these people living in non-U.S. ally countries and tell how their pain, unlike that of people in Western countries, is the doing of violent criminals ruling their country without popular support. The part the media often entirely skips, however, is the role of the West in causing these issues. A role that can almost be summarized in a single word: sanctions. Sanctions are also known as unilateral coercive economic measures, which means that they are ways for, say, the U.S. to coerce governments of sovereign nations to give in to their demands. The U.S. has the power to do this because the petrodollar system gives the U.S. dollar elevated status as the dominant currency in the global economy. And due to its dominance, it can also punish other governments if they continue to do business with the targets of these coercive measures. In this way, American officials aim to either make the government of the target country obey them or make its people so desperate that they'll overthrow their government in hopes of improving their situation. And the U.S. has used this form of economic warfare since the 1950s. On a host of different nations, like North Korea, Cuba, Iran, Syria, Venezuela, and others. Some of the toughest of all sanctions have been imposed on Iran, and politicians like Rudy Giuliani have openly said they are working because they make the people suffer. The biggest victims of this economic terrorism are people with rare diseases who cannot access essential medicines because of these sanctions, and often die as a result.
Well, let me welcome our next guest to Hidden Files.
Alfred Maurice de Zayas. De Zayas is an expert for civil and political rights and has published 9 books on a variety of legal and historical issues. He's been visiting professor of law at numerous universities, including the University of British Columbia in Canada, the Graduate Institute of the University of Geneva, the DePaul University Law School in Chicago, the Human Rights Institute at the Irish National University, Galway, and the University of Trier, Germany. At present, he teaches international law at the Geneva School of Diplomacy.
Oh, welcome to the program, Mr. De Zayas. Let's start off with your perspective on unilateral coercive measures, otherwise known as sanctions.
What must be clear to every listener is that sanctions kill. I mean, sanctions kill just as much as a bullet. Sanctions kill when you siege a town, like the Nazis siege Leningrad, that cost between 700 and 1 million human lives. Now, the sanctions that the United States has imposed on Venezuela are estimated to have cost, in the year 2018 alone, 40,000 deaths. Now, when you add all the deaths attributable to unilateral coercive measures against Cuba, against Nicaragua, against Venezuela, against Syria, against Iran, you're going to go into the hundreds of thousands of deaths. And this is not an exaggeration. UNICEF carried out an investigation of sanctions against Iraq back in the 1990s. And the estimate is that 500,000 children died because of the sanctions.
Wow, unbelievable. I mean, you say that sanctions are killing people. Can there be international legal measures taken against these sanctions?
In the light of worldwide deaths, certainly of more than 100,000 human beings directly attributable to United Nations sanctions, this is a matter for Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the International Criminal Court. This clearly falls under Article 7 of the Statute of Rome, the Statute of the International Criminal Court. That is the article on crimes against humanity. This is what has to be argued in the General Assembly. This is what has to be argued in the Security Council. This is what has to be argued at DESA and all other United Nations agencies. We already have the excellent reports of Alena Dohan. She is the UN Special Rapporteur on the adverse impact of sanctions, not only U.S. sanctions, also sanctions imposed by the United Kingdom and by Canada and by France and Germany, et cetera, et cetera. They all kill. And that is so important that the mainstream media pick up on this piece of news. As I say, my American friends know nothing about this. They know nothing about the fact that sanctions kill. They assume that sanctions are there for good reasons to persuade governments to cease violating human rights. So the hypocrisy of it, the, shall we say, the cynicism of it is mind-boggling. But that is the situation we are living in. So my appeal, which I make in my book, Building a Just World Order, is that this issue be before the International Criminal Court. But in the meantime, it can also go up to the International Court of Justice, because the General Assembly, if you get enough votes in the General Assembly, so majority plus one, you can adopt the resolution elevating the question, the legal question of the illegality of unilateral coercive measures under the UN Charter, and elevate it to the International Court of Justice for an advisory opinion.
But what do you think the overall goal is for Washington and its sanctions regime?
Our government, there is what we term the deep state. And the deep state is made up of the military, industrial, digital, financial complex. Essentially, they call the shots. And they're making money They're making plenty of money with war. They're certainly making a lot of money with the Ukraine war. And they're certainly making a lot of money with the sanctions. So the sanctions is a way, for instance, to prevent countries to do free trade and to buy cheaper where they can in the world. What sanctions have done, and people don't seem to realize it, sanctions have upturned, frustrated, subverted the benefits of globalization. Sanctions have essentially destroyed globalization and the supply chains and everything that goes with it. So that the United States, by weaponizing the dollar, is trying to impose on the rest of the world the U.S. imperial wishes. And as I said, I'm an American citizen, but I think like Noam Chomsky or like Jeffrey Sachs or like Dan Kovalik or Francis Boyle or Stephen Kinzer, who just abhor the weaponization of human rights actually to hurt people. And that exactly is what we're doing, but that with the complicity of the mainstream media, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, CNN, Fox, and the others.
What can be done to counter these measures?
Until we realize that we are being lied to day in, day out, and that we are in the United States, in Canada, in the United Kingdom, in France, in Germany, in Switzerland, we won't be able to make any progress. So what can we do? Certainly give it publicity in the General Assembly, certainly give it publicity in the Security Council, appeal to UNICEF to carry out an investigation of the deaths attributable to sanctions, appeal to the WHO to carry out an investigation of deaths attributable to lack of access to medicine. Similarly, an appeal to the Food and Agriculture Organization, and then elevate the issue to the International Court of Justice. Is this a crime against humanity? Does this amount to a violation of Article 7 of the Statute of Rome? I have no hesitation to say that it does.
Well, do you think that these unilateral sanctions help to create an alliance between those countries which have been sanctioned?
The mindset in Washington is still the mindset of the unipolar world. And the United States just simply is striking right and left and imposing sanctions and intimidating countries and actually engaging in terror against governments, and has an enormous responsibility, both civil responsibility and criminal responsibility, for the consequences of those sanctions. But there again, that is what I say, and what Richard Falk says, and what Jeffrey Sachs says. But that is not what you're going to read in the New York Times and in the Washington Post. And thus far, I don't see the American media changing. I see the American media as the spokes, spokesperson, as the sounding board of the Pentagon and the sounding board of the State Department. So don't expect any level of self-criticism inside the established media. You can read very good analysis in the so-called alternative media.
Are there any final comments you have on this, Mr. DeZayas?
You will see that there's plenty of Americans who think like I do. On the other hand, none of us is in a position of power. None of us is in a position that we can actually influence policy. And we can write our articles and write our analysis and hope that some people who are in a position of power will say, that makes sense. Why not try that? Why not shift? Why not try a different paradigm than the unipolar paradigm that we now have?
Well, thank you so much for being with us right here in Hidden Files, Mr. Alfred DeZayas. As many countries continue to be affected by the sanctions regime, there's growing solidarity between many of the targeted countries and increased cooperation between them. These nations have had to be resilient and had to count on their own ingenuity to survive and, for many others, even thrive during these sanctions. And now it appears that the pendulum of global power is swinging, and it is heading towards the east. This should be a very interesting journey, and Hidden Files will keep you informed during this process. Well, it has been a pleasure being with you on this episode of Hidden Files, and hopefully you will join us next week. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse
والذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us. The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Brothers and sisters, I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi in this program. In this program, we will have a look at some of the concepts from the book Mafatih al-Hayat by Ayatollah Javadi Amuli. Dear listeners, in this episode, we will have a look at some of the concepts mentioned in this book regarding the rights of the neighbors. Now, throughout the different traditions of the Ahlul Bayt, we have many instances that the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam have taught us, have actually recommended every Muslim member to care for his or her neighbors. Now, for example, in the Holy Quran, the Almighty Allah has mentioned وَعْبُدُ اللَّهِ وَلَا تُشْرِكُوا بِهِ شَيْئًا after mentioning that you have to only actually worship Allah and do not associate him with him anything. وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا. And you have to do good to whom? First, to your parents. And then you have to do good to these people, to your relatives, to your kinship, to the ones who do not have anyone to turn to, and to the ones who are your close neighbors, and to the ones who are your far neighbors. You have to do good to them. This is very important, dear listeners. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam says, when your neighbor is not here with you, when he is away, you need to hold him dear. وَإِكْرَامُهُ شَاهِدًا. And at the very same time that he is present, you also have to do him good. You have to hold him dear in his presence. And when you see your neighbor is being oppressed, you need to help him. This is one of the rights of the neighbors. You have to hold secrets. You have to see when you see something bad about him. When you see some defects, you need to conceal them. Don't you want the Almighty Allah to conceal your faults, your defects? So try to be just like God regarding your neighbor as well. So when you see something bad from him, you need to conceal. You do not need to make everybody aware of your neighborhood that this is the neighbor that has done something wrong. This is what Imam Sajjad alayhi salam is telling us about whom? Not about parents, not about family members, but about a neighbor. Imam Sajjad continues, if you see that there is something going on in the neighborhood with one of your neighbors and you see that he is someone who is actually about to accept the kind of advice you are giving him, do so. Try to advise him in khafa, while not in the public. This is very important. When you see the inflictions are happening to him, when you see your neighbor is having many problems, do help him. Try not to leave him alone. This is your neighbor. And also at the very end, you need to have this kind of relationship with him. The kind of relation with grace. The kind of relation with nobility.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Nowadays, what do we see? Between every kind of family members, we see many family members discussing to each other. And what are they talking about? About the problems and defects and faults of their neighbors. This is in exact contrast with what the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam are telling us. Now, the question is, who actually is the neighbor? Whom? Until which? To what extent do we have to consider these neighbors as our true neighbors? Rasulullah, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, says, you want to know Who are your true neighbors? The true neighbors are the ones who are to the extent that are 40 houses away from you. Up to this point are considered the true neighbors. So nowadays, in our blocks, in our buildings, in our apartments, whom do we really actually consider our neighbors? So this is important. And our imams tell us that you need to tolerate your neighbors, because Imam Kadhim alayhi salam says, you want to know if you are a good neighbor, you want to know if you are a good neighbor Muslim or not, this is the criterion. لَيْسَ حُسْنُ الْجِوَارِ كَفَّ الْأَذَى. This is not considered of being a good Muslim neighbor just to not doing bad or badness to your neighbor. Yet Imam steps up, Imam moves forward and says, this is the criterion if you want to be considered among the good Muslim neighbors. This is the criterion. What is it? حُسْنُ الْجِوَارِ صَبْرُكَ عَلَى الْأَذَى. You want to be considered from among the good Muslim neighbors? You need to tolerate the bad actions of your neighbor. Now, dear listeners, as you can see, our traditions and the words of the Ahlul Bayt are replete with how good you must do to your neighbors. Now, what is it? What good is it for us if we do good, if we have good actions and interactions with our neighbors? Now, one of the most important things that we mentioned in the previous episode is the very fact that if you want your children to have a good education, you need to consider your neighbor as your as your mother. What kinds of behaviors you have to your the very same kinds you have, you must have towards your neighbors. Now, the Ahlul Bayt are giving us promises that if you do good to your neighbors, what happens to your own houses as well as your own homelands? Imam says, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says, صِلَةُ الرَّحِمِ وَحُسْنُ الْجِوَارِ. If you try to constantly have relations with your relatives, and if you try to be a good neighbors, وَحُسْنُ الْجِوَارِ يَعْمُرَانِ الدِّيَارِ وَيَزِيدَانِ فِي الْأَعْمَارِ. What good do these two things good do to you? They actually make your lands prosperous. Why? Because as well as you have this kinds of relationships with your neighbors, you will have this kind of cooperative action between yourselves, and this will cause not your own selves to grow, but your own neighborhood. And when you have this kinds of neighborhoods helping out each other, we will have prosperous lands. This is what the imams have promised us. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to help us be better neighbors in our lifetimes in this world. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's screams.
The Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel's indiscriminate strikes kill more Palestinians across Gaza as the total death toll nears 38,850. Far-right Israeli Minister Itamar Ben-Gavir tours Al-Aqsa Mosque, drawing anger from Palestinians who see such visits as provocative. And an Israeli drone strike in eastern Lebanon kills a member of the pro-resistance Islamic group. Welcome, everybody. We begin this bulletin with Gaza, where Israel's indiscriminate bombing and shelling campaign continues unabated, claiming more civilian lives in the blockaded territory. Nearly two dozen civilians have lost their lives in the latest Israeli airstrikes that targeted several locations across Gaza. One of the attacks happened on Cairo school, housing displaced Palestinians in Gaza City, resulting in the death of nearly 11 people, including three children. The regime has recently focused its attacks on refugee camps, with the deadliest being Saturday's raid on the Al-Mawasi camp, killing over 90 Palestinians. Israel claimed that Palestinian resistance fighters use these places, but Hamas has denied the accusation, saying the regime is trying to cover up its massacres. The Palestinian death toll since October the 7th now stands at around 38,850. Our correspondent, Moti Abu Mosabe, joined us earlier from central Gaza city of Deir al-Balah to give us the latest on the